Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. On today's program, we have with us Kathy Curran and Charlie Myers, owners of the Keeper's Cut Meadery here in western North Carolina. Kathy and Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today with our radio show. Tell us a little bit about how you folks met and how you came to be interested in mead.
Chuck, thanks for having us. We met through actually my son, who is a chiropractor, as well as Charlie. So that's how we met several years ago. And we have a lot of common interests. We started making wine at home from grapes, and we are both outdoor people. We garden, and we decided we wanted to try beekeeping. And that beekeeping evolved into mead making, which evolved into we deciding to do a commercial meadery. So it's been an evolution over about a 4 or 5 year period. And so here we are doing a commercial meadery.
Tell me a little bit about what kind of gardening you do. Was this major gardening or just gardening in the backyard?
Backyard gardening, Chuck. We do fruit trees and we've got vegetable gardening and we just keep adding to our fruit. And we got very interested in beekeeping. We joined our McDowell County Honeybee Club. Started beekeeping about 4 years ago and have grown to right now. We have 17 hives of our own, which we use our own honey for making mead, but also for developing our recipes for our commercial products.
Let's talk about the beekeeping just a bit. I'm sure there's some people who are listening on the radio today who really don't know what mead is. So let me just give a quick definition, and if I'm not right, you can correct me. In the business, the viticulture industry, mead is known as honey wine. That is, you use the sweetness of the honey as opposed to the sweetness of grape juice in order to make your end product called mead. When you were doing your beekeeping, tell us a little bit more details about what kind of hives did you get and what kind of experience did you have?
We have the Langstroth hives. Kathy originally wanted just one hive, so we went to the bee supply place and the old man said, "It's never going to happen." Well, we were insulted. We thought he meant that we were not going to be even able to keep one hive. So he says, no, he said, "You don't understand. It's addicting. You want more than one hive." Well, we ended up with 2 that year, 10 the following year, 22 last summer, and this year we hope to have over 30. We tried making mead in the early stages, and I was making it in 1 gallon jugs. And it was just not coming out the way we wanted it. It had sulfur smell to it. It just was not drinkable. So we decided to go the bigger route. We started making it in 5 gallon carboys. Well, lo and behold, that solved our problem. We didn't have any issues after that. So there was an issue with the smaller batches for some reason. And anybody who's into making mead and wants to do it at home or start, I would recommend that you do that with the 5 gallon carboys as opposed to 1 gallon. I think you're going to have less problem, even though it's a bigger batch to make. So that's where we are with the mead production. And
so what kind of meads do you make, Charlie?
Well, we start out with the traditional mead. Traditional mead is, like you said, nothing but water and honey and, of course, yeast. Then you can build on that. You can have mead made with honey and fruit, which is called a melomel. Or you can make mead from honey and water and spices, which is metheglin. Or you can make it with, hot peppers. That's called a capsumel. So there's all kinds of meads out there, but the basic traditional mead originally was nothing but honey and water and yeast. You can literally make millions of different recipes with the ingredients that you want to add to it.
Now, have you, to this point, have you pretty much fixed the recipe for the meads that you plan to be selling?
Well, we're not open yet, and we can talk a little bit about that a little later, but we do have 1,000 gallons ready to bottle right now. That's been fermenting and aging for over a year. We have about 8 different meads. We have the traditional sweet and traditional dry. We also have a blueberry, a blackberry mead, a strawberry mead, a pineapple hot pepper, which is Kathy's favorite. We have a pumpkin spice, and there's another
ginger.
One. So we have a cherry, tart cherry. We have about 8 different meads right now, and we have some other ones in the process that we're experimenting with. One is called a bochet. Now that's a traditional mead. We take our honey, and we boil the honey to a certain degree to caramelize the honey. And this gives it imparts a toffee, chocolate, caramel, marshmallow type taste to it.
You're making me thirsty here, Charlie. Just want to know you about that.
Actually, I just bottled 5 gallons of a test bochet today, and I had a little taste of it, and it's delicious. So men seem to like that one very much because a lot of people comment, they say it has a little bit of a bourbon flavor to it. It reminds them of bourbon. That's one of my favorites. So, and again, you can make a bochet with other ingredients as well. You can add fruit to it. You can add cherry and have almost like a chocolate cherry flavor. You can add pineapple to it. You can have all kinds of different recipes. Blackberry goes very well with a bochet. But you can boil it to different degrees to caramelize it, depending on what kind of color and flavoring you want. The longer you boil it, the more bitter it gets, and the darker it gets, and the more, the more butterscotch or toffee flavor, more like a sugar daddy would taste. Now, people often think, when they think of mead, they think because it's made from honey, that automatically it's going to be sweet like honey. And they're shocked when they dry or a semi-dry, semi-sweet mead because it's not what they're expecting. But you can make mead just like you can any other wine. You can go very dry to very dessert type of mead. North Carolina, people seem to like the sweeter meads and the sweet tea, the sweet mead. So probably 75% of them like the sweeter meads. Kathy likes the drier meads.
Let's back up just for a second. Where did you get the idea of this bochet? That's what you're calling it?
Yeah, it's called bochet, B-O-C-H-E-T, or brochet, B-R-O-C-H-E-T. And there are two books out there. One is The Complete Mead Maker by Ken Schramm. That's kind of like the Bible that everybody goes by right now. There's not a whole lot of educational literature out there on mead making. But I got the idea from that. And just wanted to experiment with it. So that's what we did. I just took some surplus honey and boiled it. And after a few splashes and burnt hands and sticky countertops that Kathy wasn't too happy with, we come up with a bochet that I think is very good, very delicious.
Sticky countertops. Okay, Kathy, I guess you're designated as the cleaner-upper on that operation?
Oh, definitely.
Well, I want to back up just one step here, too. When you were talking about the different kind of meads you're going, you mentioned one that was pineapple and jalapenos or something, I think?
Yes, pineapple hot pepper.
Let me ask Kathy, whose idea was that?
I think this was a combination of both of us as we were trying to think of recipes to try and develop and experiment with.
Did you wake up in the middle of the night with that one?
I guess we did, yeah. But this is really, like Charlie said, this is my favorite. It's not a very sweet wine, but it could be. But we have finished it a little bit on the dry side, but it has a nice, refreshing pineapple taste, and then it finishes with a little bit of bite to it, and it's just one of my favorites.
Sounds delightful. I'm going to have to try it first chance I get. Well, let's move forward for a little bit of technical thing here. I guess this goes back to you, Charlie. If you are talking to somebody about making a good mead, what kind of yeasts would you recommend they use?
The traditional standby yeast that most everybody starts with is Lauvin D47. More and more mead makers now are going with 71B and also some other typical wine yeast. It's a wide open area. Just experiment. That's what we do. We experiment with different yeast, a champagne yeast for maybe a lighter mead. Maybe we'll use a RC212 for a cherry mead, and maybe a Montrachet for a blackberry mead. So right now we're in the process of just trying different yeast and see what kind of profile we get from that. And unless you drink a lot of mead, which the average person hasn't, and I haven't before, 2 years ago, so most people do not know what really a good mead is or what kind of profile they're picking up on the mead when they taste it. So the yeast definitely will impart different characteristics. The D47 will give more of a citrus type when you're making a traditional mead. So you try to match your yeast with the fruit that you may be using or the honey you may be using, because different honeys will give you a different profile as well. Here in North Carolina, we have sourwood, which is very hard to come by anyplace else, and it has been rated, 3 or 4 years, the top best honey in the world in the past, 7-8 years. So it is a very desired honey, and it's hard to come by, but it has a stronger flavor to it, and it finishes with a little bit of anise. And unless you are trained to pick up these flavors, you're not really going to be able to do that. So some people, they can taste it. If you're like a wine judge or a connoisseur in wine, you drink a lot of wine, you'll be able to pick up these profiles better than the average person.
Well, Charlie and Kathy, we're going to take a break about this point in time. Everybody, we've been talking with Kathy Curran and Charlie Myers, the owners of Keeper's Cut Meadery. And we'll be right back. Hang on, folks.
Today's program is being brought to you by Monty's Mountain Weather Station. Monty Shelton is one of our local celebrities who lives way up Turtle Knee Hollow. He was a great soldier in the Army, where he served as a weatherman providing weather information for our fighting men in the mountains of Afghanistan. After his time in the Army, Monty came back to the mountains of Madison County to take up work at his father's farm. He quickly realized that working his farm successfully was dependent upon knowing the weather so he could plan his work day. Drawing upon his experience in the mountains of Afghanistan, Monty developed his own weather station, which uses no electricity or batteries, making it perfect for the homes here in the mountains, which are off the grid. I recently visited him to take a look at his new weather station that he had set up in his front yard. His weather station consisted of 3 tobacco sticks tied together at one end. The other ends were spread out to form a triangle on the ground. He carefully tied a 6-inch diameter river rock to one end of the string of twine. The other end of the twine was tied to the top of the triangle where the tobacco sticks crossed, so the rock was suspended about 6 inches off the ground. Monty explained that when you see the rock shadow on the ground beneath it, the sun was shining. If you saw the air quivering above the rock, it was hot. When the rock was wet, it had rained. If the rock was dripping, it was still raining. When the rock looked shiny, there was freezing rain. If the rock was swinging, it was windy. Direction of the wind was determined by which direction the rock was swinging. If the rock was bouncing on the end of the baling twine, an earthquake was taking place nearby. You can see the rock standing straight out sideways, you were in a tornado. If the rock was white on top, it was snowing. If you couldn't see the rock during the day, the snow was over 6 inches deep. Monty was quick to point out that there were some conditions that made it hard to call what was exactly happening. If you couldn't see the weather station, it was foggy. Or it could be that it was completely underwater from a flood. Monty reminded to tell folks with vision impairment that they may not be able to get an accurate reading from his weather station. Monty's Mountain Weather Station, another unique product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Monty's Mountain Weather Station for $1.298 at the retail counter of Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall, North Carolina. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been on the phone with Kathy Curran and Charlie Myers, the owners of Keeper's Cut Meadery here in Western North Carolina. We've been talking to them in the first part of the program about where they came from, some of the hobbies, how they got into this crazy business of having a meadery. And on this part of the show, we'd like to talk to them about some of the practical things of having a meadery and starting one from scratch. So which one of you wants to jump on what you did next once you decided to go commercial?
Well, I'll take a stab at it. What we did, we tasted some mead from a national meadery, a well-known one, and we were not at all impressed with it. And we thought, oh, my God, if this is how the mead's going to turn out, I don't know if we want to do it. And then I visited another meadery in Maryland and was just floored by the absolute quality and taste of this mead. So I was convinced then and at that point that definitely we were going to make a mead, and we're going to strive to make a mead as well as this company has made it. So we did our little experiments with our 1 gallon and went to 5 gallon carboy, and then we decided to go ahead and apply for a license with the TTB and the federal government, who basically is concerned with getting your license, but more importantly, getting their tax money from the beverage that you eventually will sell. So we applied for that, and that's about a 9-month process from the time you submit your application. We were very fortunate. We got a response in about 3 or 4 months. We were actually shocked that we got an approval or a permit that quickly. So we scrambled right away. Here we are getting our permit in, I think it was December 2 years ago, and we started making mead then in late January, early February, in 100-gallon tanks. And so our first batches, the 1,000 gallons we have now, were made in 100-gallon tanks. We started the fermentation in the primary, and then, of course, we moved it over to a secondary fermentation and age it. We had to go through federal licensing, then we had to go through state licensing, and we had to get, of course, local approval as well. Now, the strange thing is the federal government won't give you a license until you have a building. So you have to acquire a building and put forth that rent money or whatever is required until you get the permit. So some people are actually, when they start their meadery process, have their building 9 months before they even get a permit, so they're paying 9 months rent and not even having any income or even able to make anything until that time. So you have 9 months before you get your permit. You're paying rent on a building or a mortgage, and then it's going to take you a minimum of 4 months and a maximum of a year or more to make your meat. So that's a big upfront investment, money going out that, and no income coming in that you have to deal with. We were fortunate that we have a neighbor that had a vacant garage, and we were able to lease that off of her for basically the cost of the electric bill. So for $25 a month, we had a building we could start making mead, and we didn't have to put out that thousands of dollars, $9,000 in 9 months for rent. So we were very fortunate. We saved a lot of money doing that. We bought our equipment used. We believe in bootstrap business. Don't buy new equipment at the time of come whenever you can't afford that. But go as cheaply as you can, as efficiently as you can, and start small and make your mistakes up front when you're small. Avoid those big mistakes in the beginning, and I think that will pave the way for greater success in the long run.
Talk to me just a little bit about how you went about finding the tanks and deciding what size of tanks that you needed.
Chuck, we actually had some friends, some acquaintances that have a winery that contacted us to let us, that knew that we would be looking. And actually, there was a very small winery that was going out of business that was not far away from us. And we contacted them. It was an older couple that just, you know, was not interested in trying to do production anymore. And so we were able to buy our tanks off of them initially, and then we purchased actually three more used tanks from another local winery that was selling some about 6 months ago. So that has saved us a tremendous amount of money by doing it that way. And, when Charlie and I started this, we were determined not to go into debt to start this, and because we were a garage startup with the plans to find a location to grow our production and also for our tasting room.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you have the ability to share with people that kind of thinking about doing that way, because a lot of people look at having a winery or a meadery and say, oh my goodness, look at the capital equipment costs. Holy cow. And they get discouraged just from the sheer volume of money they're going to have to throw out to get started.
Exactly.
Let's go back to the garage a little bit that you got from your neighbor. Did you have anything in there? Is that where you started accumulating your used equipment?
Let me back up just a minute, because she's a very good friend and a very special person to us. Now, what we have at our home is we have a garage that is attached to our home. And for TTB approval, they will not allow an attached garage. So it has to be a detached building from, your living quarters. And Susan happened to have that, and she was wanting to help us get started and help us get going, and she offered. So what we did in lieu of rent was actually finish the inside of her garage for her. And then, yes, we brought our tanks in, we set that up, and then we started our production right there in the garage.
I'll be darned. It's a real garage shop operation. I love it.
It is.
A lot of the meaderies that are starting up now are doing it out of their garages in the beginning, because there's a big outlay if you with equipment and so forth. So they're trying to do what we're doing, but I think we were very, very fortunate, and it's going to be hard to find somebody who's doing it as economically as we've been able to do it. But we outgrew the garage very quickly. One of the things that we learned from other established meaderies was that if you think you're going to need 1,000 square feet, you better plan on 2,000. If you think you need 200-gallon tank, you better go 400-gallon tank, because you're going to grow faster than what you think you're going to be growing. Most of these meaderies that I've talked to across the country, they set their one-year, two-year goals, and they're meeting or exceeding those two-year goals within 6 months. So it is the fastest growing alcoholic beverage industry in the United States right now. And there is, as people become more knowledgeable about mead, there is a greater demand being created for it. So, we have the roughly 150-gallon tanks as the capacity right now. And we can turn them out pretty quickly and then put them in oak barrels or other aging containers and still have a ongoing production of mead. The neat thing about mead is honey is a year-round source. So grapes, if you have a winery, you have to rely on when the grapes are going to be harvested. When they're harvested, you make your wine, and then you're done until the next year. We can make mead year-round. So we're very fortunate in that respect. We outgrew our garage. We order bottles. We have a bottling machine. And now we have to bump into each other just to get around in the garage. And I like that more than Kathy does. But I try to get her in the garage more than she wants to be over there. But I'm the meat maker, so everything's on me. Kathy has a full-time job. She's not retired.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So I'm the mead maker, and I'm, more of the push around here when it comes to that. She's the boss, but I like to think I am. But she does has a full-time job. She is an industrial engineer for a local automotive parts company here in Old Fort, North Carolina.
Okay.
So the work, the meat making falls on my hands. Of course, with my chemistry background, being a chiropractor, you know, it's a lot easier for me to understand the chemistry involved. Getting back to our production, well, we were looking for a bigger building. And Marion, City of Marion, had a few properties, but they were not suitable for both the production and a tasting room. So we gave up on that idea and went to Morganton, and we're looking at some buildings over there, and some things didn't work out over in Morganton, so we ended up back in Marion, and we found a building. And I'll let Kathy talk a little more about the building we found and what that consists of.
Can we jump in here just for a second? I've got a couple questions on AstroFest. You told me earlier that you had about 1,000 gallons now that you're getting ready to bottle. That's around 5,000 bottles. And you have a little bottling setup, I assume.
Yes.
A bottling line, I guess. Who's doing the labels? Who designed the labels?
Well, actually, I designed the labels. And so we are working with a label company that's actually out of High Point area to get our labels printed. But I actually did the label design.
What's the theme of the label? Describe it.
It is Keeper's Cut. And it took us a while to come up with the logo, and we finally came up with that. But the Keeper's Cut is because we are taking the cut from the honey. So it's a beekeeper's cut of the honey to make the mead. And then our logo is just our initials, Keeper's Cut, and we have that inside of a honeycomb. And then there's a sword coming through that's actually cutting the letters with a drop of honey coming off.
Oh, sounds very cute.
It's simple, simple, and we hope elegant.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. At this point in time, what I'd like to hear from you folks is, when do you plan to be open, and give folks an idea of how they could find you?
Chuck, we have purchased a building in downtown Marion. We are in the process of renovating at this point, so that's going to take us a few months to do that. It will house our production and our tasting room, and then we also have a basement area for oak barrel storage. We will be off of Henderson Street, on the corner of Henderson Street, West Henderson, and Depot Street in downtown Marion. And we plan to be open late summer or early September.
Okay. Well, folks, we've been talking on the telephone today with Kathy Curran and Charlie Myers, owners of Keeper Cut Meadery out in Marion, North Carolina. I have to tell you, I can hardly wait to taste some of those interesting-sounding meads out there. Kathy and Charlie, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your story with our radio audience.
Thanks, Chuck, for having us. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you, Chuck. Appreciate the opportunity.
My pleasure. We'll talk to you soon. Okay, folks, we'll call that a wrap.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!